You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Evan Settery, joined by George Bremer, the Colts beat writer for the Herald Bulletin on a Tuesday night, discussing a little over 24 hours ago, George, the Colts really just had a massive epic collapse where they were up 25 to 9, and they ended up losing that game. What was your assessment of exactly how the Colts lost that 31-25 game, where I thought it was a game where I mentioned it last night, where I thought, quite honestly, George, this is a season-changing moment for this team, where if they go in and dominate the Ravens like they were and finish that game off, all of a sudden you can put the Colts in discussion next to the Titans for the AFC South. You can put the Colts in discussion among these teams fighting for a wild card spot down the line, where the Colts, that would have just changed the entire script of their season so far. They would have pulled off that win last night. And now all of a sudden with that big fourth-quarter collapse, we're right back where we started, potentially even more with the panic that I've seen so far amongst Colts fans in the last 24 hours since then.
Yeah, I mean, they were on their way to a big statement win against one of the better teams in the AFC. Everything was lining up. It was a season-turning kind of moment, and then just a complete collapse. And I think there's so many things that you can point to. As is the case, anytime you lose a game, there's plenty of blame to go around. I know that, you know, Frank Reich's taken a lot of heat for settling for a field goal there late in the fourth quarter. And, you know, them, and then that field goal getting blocked and that leading to the tying touchdown and 2-point conversion. Obviously, Rodrigo Blankenship's under a lot of fire. He had that strange kind of injury. We're still not really sure what's going on with that or what that's going to lead to here as the week rolls on. But, you know, he obviously wasn't right, wasn't himself. They leave 7 points on the field in the kicking game. That's another huge moment. But to me, you know, those things, I'm not going to downplay them. I'm not going to kill Reich too much, because in the moment I was thinking the same thing, and that's kind of always my way. I try not to second guess. I try to do what I was thinking, you know, at the moment. And my thought process was kind of along the same line as his at that moment. You've got the 3 points. Don't do something dumb and turn the ball over. You know, just get that field goal, get the 11-point lead. There really wouldn't be enough time for the Ravens to come back at that point, especially with the onside kick rules being changed the way they were. And then Calais Campbell just breaks through and blocks a field goal. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a mentality in the NFL these days that's probably necessary, that I was ignoring, that Reich was ignoring, about just trying to finish games out when you can. They did have a first down at the 17, you know, before those two runs that set up that 3rd and 8. And if you're a little more aggressive there, maybe you finish in the end zone. We're having a big different conversation right now. I don't want to let Blankenship off the hook either. Those were obviously huge points, and clearly the last one goes through. We're having a different conversation right now, but it's still hard for me to fathom how the defense collapsed the way it did. And I know I've heard a lot about injuries over the last few days or last few hours here, but to give up 4 straight touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions, that's the kind of thing you see in an overmatched college football game. It's not the kind of thing that should happen on an NFL evening, and especially not when you just need one stop to win a game. So to me, you know, there's a lot of places to point the blame. The biggest one is that defense just completely and utterly failing to show up the final 18 minutes or so of the game.
Yeah, it really was a big collapse by this defense, especially when you put in the context that was might have been one of the best performances we've ever seen from Carson Wentz in his entire career, let alone what we've seen so far with the Colts. He had 402 yards, 2 touchdowns, 11.5 yards per attempt, which is just an absolutely elite number for any quarterback in the NFL. You saw Pittman have a great game once again, really establishing himself as the number one wide receiver for this team. Jonathan Taylor had some special moments mixed in there as well. Even Paris Campbell, the Cox showed up in this one as well, and the offensive line held up pretty well to go on top of that. So the offense really wasn't an issue, George. With that defense, this is something we talk about, I feel like, every single time the Colts play an elite quarterback in the NFL. Again, it happened once more where Lamar Jackson just shredded this team. I think many teams are picking up on, if you have an elite or an above-average quarterback, you don't have to run the ball against them. You can just throw it against a soft zone coverage, and you're going to complete around 80% of your passes and go for over 400 yards, which is what Lamar Jackson did last night, 442 passing yards, 504 total yards from one person last night, Lamar Jackson. He only had, I believe, 7 incomplete passes throughout the game as well. The Ravens in the second half just realized, hey, we're not running the ball that well, but this Colts secondary is going to keep playing soft shell against us, and why not just take advantage of that? And that's what they're doing now. We've seen Russell Wilson do it in week one, and now Lamar Jackson do it in week five. What's your assessment of what's gone wrong here? Because every single time we've seen this against an elite quarterback, George, it continuously keeps happening. The definition of insanity, George, is to keep going back and forth with the same thing over and over again. And it's what's happening again with Lamar Jackson against an elite quarterback.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, they mixed up a lot. They didn't just stay in one coverage. They threw the kitchen sink at him in the fourth quarter, and I think that's another problem here. Nothing they did worked, and that really makes you wonder what's going on back there when you can't, you know, you played quarters, you played quarter half, you played your zone, you brought blitzes, you brought disguise blitzes. You did a little bit of everything, and nothing so much as slowed them down, which – I don't know if that speaks to personnel, if it speaks to what they're doing in practice during the week, if it speaks to calling the wrong play at the wrong time. You know, whatever the problem was, it showed up a little bit at the end of the Miami game. You know, when Jacoby Brissett was able to put up two pretty easy, pretty quick touchdowns at the end of that game, you saw it again from the moment it was 22-3 with 3:06 left in the third quarter on. The Ravens had four more possessions in the rest of that quarter, into the fourth quarter, into overtime. All of them in the end zone. Two of them tack on two-point conversions, which is incredible when you think about it. They walk away the 31-25 win. And, you know, there were so many things in there that went wrong. I think if you're going to pinpoint one area that needs to improve immediately, it's that two-minute defense. And I think that's what you were talking about earlier. When they get into that hurry-up defense, they tend to lay off. They don't press. They give cushion to these receivers. And the quarterbacks are more than happy to just stand back there and, you know, take the yardage that they're given and just go right down the field. And you saw it four straight times, four straight drives. They changed coverages in terms of, you know, what they were doing. But that cushion was always there. And it always is. It feels like it. It's something that they need to correct, but it's not just the defensive backs. It's the linebackers as well. I mean, two of those touchdowns are passes over the middle of the field to the tight end, and both of the two-point conversions down there near the goal line, and Bobby Okereke just has to get in there and disrupt that. You know, it was too easy. Literally, I think Andrews was walking in on the last two-point conversion. You can't let those things happen. And to see it happen so consistently, and I know, you know, the injuries, I'm sure, played a role with the Ravens forcing the tempo. They weren't able to rotate as many bodies as they could in there. But it's all three levels of the defense. I mean, the corners obviously have to do a better job, stick with their guys. The linebackers have got to be better in coverage. They've just not been getting the job done pretty much all year long. And the pass rush has to get home. And, you know, maybe they need fresher legs in there. Maybe they need to get these guys back, get them healthy so they can rotate them in. But I think it was just a total system failure for about 18 minutes there. And I don't think there was really a doubt in anybody's mind. The moment Calais Campbell blocked that field goal, I think everybody expected the Ravens to go right down the field and tie the game just as they did.
We're back and better than ever. All eyes on the gridiron as teams are back on for another football season. As always, BetOnline's number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device right now to sign up today to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, and BetOnline is always where the game starts.
Let's hit on the pass rush, too, because we went on the secondary a little bit in depth there, George, and they definitely share a lot of the blame, and they were just ravaged by injuries last night as well. Xavier Rhodes went out for a little bit. Isaiah Rodgers went out for a little bit as well. Kari Willis, I think, was splitting reps with Andrew Sendejo. I don't know if he's fully 100% back yet from his injury as well. But what about this pass rush, George? You talk about, I feel like every week now at this point, they're definitely missing Kwity Paye, who they definitely banked on making an immediate impact. He's been out the last 2 weeks with a hamstring injury. But I don't even know if Kwity Paye would have made that much of a difference last night, quite honestly, George, because Tyquan Lewis had a great game, 1.5 sacks, couple QB pressures and hits. Al-Kadeem Muhammad had 0.5 sack and a couple QB pressures and hits. DeForest Buckner, though, did not show up much at all. I know a lot of teams are just going to double Buckner at this point with the lack of edge rush presence by the Colts, but this pass rush, this is what the Colts built this defense on to take some pressure off that back seven, George. Just the front four for, I think, a month in a row now just hasn't, quite simply hasn't gotten it done. What can the Colts do to change things up here? Is it just hoping and banking on Kwity Paye coming back and giving them some sort of jolt and a miracle there at pass rush, or are they in trouble here? Because DeForest Buckner hasn't looked like a $100 million guy the last couple weeks, but he has a lot of pressure on him just to make things work here up front. Kamoko Ture flashed a little bit last week. He didn't do much this week. Ben Bianigu is not really turning into much at all anymore. What's your thoughts here on this front four, George? I feel like this Colts unit, and the front four especially, is starting to sink.
No, absolutely. They're in trouble. I don't think there's any question about that. They gambled that these young guys were going to develop and that they were going to, you know, take steps forward this year and make big plays for them. And it hasn't happened. You know, they let Justin Houston go. They let Denico Autry go. And those guys accounted, they may not have been elite players in this league, but they accounted for double digit sacks together. And it was, you know, the vast majority of the sacks they had last year came from those two guys. And then DeForest Buckner, there was a bet placed by Chris Ballard, basically, that these young pass rushers would take step forwards, that to collectively they would get it done, that they might not have one guy with 9 or 10 sacks, but they might end up with 4 or 5 guys with 4, 5, 6 sacks, and that you know, the accumulation of all that would be enough, and it simply hasn't happened. I mean, Muhammad's been Muhammad. He's given you what you expect from him. He's pretty stout against the run. He occasionally makes flashes in the pass rush, but he's not a guy that you're ever going to expect to go out there and be a difference maker coming off the edge and putting pressure on the quarterback. Tyquan Lewis is a very similar player. You know, I think he's very similar to Autry. He'll have his sacks here and there, and he'll have flash plays there. But again, he's another guy that probably does his best work against the run. And you needed Kamoko Ture to really step forward this year and be the guy that they think that he can be. He showed some flashes of that against Miami. There was some optimism. He frankly looked lost last night. You know, he was part of the problem. There's no question about that. Not being able to get in there and make a difference. They're hopeful they're going to get Kwity Paye back. But, you know, relying on a rookie to that degree is always dangerous, especially at this position. It takes a while for pass rushers to come along most of the time. It's very seldom you get a Nick Bosa who comes in and, you know, lights the world afire right away. They usually need a year or two under their belts to learn kind of how to set up things up against pro tackles and to make plays. And, you know, relying on a rookie to this degree always had a high level of danger. And I think you're seeing it now. They hope they're going to get Dio Odengo back before the season's over. But he's going to be in an even worse situation than Kwity Paye is, because he's going to be a rookie coming in with no training camp and maybe about half a season or so left to try to get things right. I don't see, you know, some miracle on the horizon. The only thing they can hope for right now is that when Paye comes back, you do kind of get that rotation. You can throw some different kind of looks in terms of style, technique at these offensive linemen. And then, of course, the schedule is going to get a little better, you know, after this too. They're going to play Tom Brady later in the season. But I don't know if they've got, outside of him, I don't know if they've got another elite quarterback, you know, on the horizon. And so maybe those things collectively, there's a chance to build some confidence over the next few weeks. But that pass rush is a serious problem, and I don't think it's one that's going to go away.
Yeah, look at the schedule here. The Colts probably play only 3 elite quarterbacks, and 2 of those come in back-to-back weeks. Josh Allen, then Tom Brady, and then Christmas Day, you got Kyler Murray. So outside these rest of these games for the Colts, only 3 of the games are against, I would say, top-flight quarterbacks. So you can maybe make some hay here and make some noise as far as trying to get that pass rush going. But I just want to throw this question out to you, George, because we're kind of speaking about this here and maybe seeing if this pass rush can get itself together. Do you think there's any possibility, George, if the Colts, let's say, are – tied with Tennessee around a trade deadline and they feel like they need to make a move. Do you think there's any possibility that Chris Bowers gives up like a late draft pick for like a veteran pass rush, like a Ryan Kerrigan or something along those lines? Someone like a Justin Houston last year, where if Ture and Banigu aren't showing you much, and obviously betting on Dio to come off in a torn Achilles to give you a boost, like a veteran, what I think is a big mistake to make as far as a risk goes there. Do you think that's any possibility, George? Do you think that the Colts are just going to roll with what they got?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a small possibility. You never say never in this league, but it's not something that I anticipate. I mean, they had that opportunity repeatedly throughout the offseason. Even, you know, right up to the start of the season, there were a couple guys still out there. But guys like Kerrigan and Justin Houston were available very late in the process when they weren't going to cost you a lot. And if you didn't sign those guys then, maybe you're willing to give up a draft pick now, but I doubt it. You know, I think – that's a move that had to be made a few months ago, and they made the decision that they kind of cast the die at that point. I think they're going to roll with what they've got, and that's why I don't see really much change on that front coming. You know, there's always the possibility that one of these young guys, that a light bulb goes off and that they, you know, really pick things up and finish the year strong. But that really, I think, is the only hope that you have to see things change up front right now. I think it's a problem area. It's one that a lot of people could see coming, and I don't think it's going to get fixed.
Let's hit on Frank Reich for a second, George, because obviously the offense had a really good game last night, but I want to hit on two moments. I imagine your Twitter mentions are blowing up as well about these two moments. Just the end of halftime adjustment from Frank Reich. I know it paid off with a field goal at the end, but them kind of just milking the clock, and it seemed like they really didn't have much urgency to get down the field. They obviously got converted into a field goal late to make it 10-3 at halftime. But then the late game situation, 3rd and 8, a lot of people are saying you should have put that in Carson Wentz's hands to officially put the nail in the coffin there, not play conservative for a field goal there when you knew your kicker was hurt. What's your assessment of Frank Reich in those two situations last night? I know the first one really not is that bad because you still got a field goal out of it, but the last one, maybe I want to focus on more here, George. 3rd and 8, with the game on the line, you're up by 8. Do you feel like Frank Reich should have gone for the kill there, or do you think he made the right assessment, kind of banking on them playing conservatively, taking the timeouts away from the Ravens?
Yeah, I like that on the first half. You know, I think the offense was in a different spot there too. They were really still kind of not, I don't want to say struggling, but they weren't getting a lot done in that first half as far as finishing drives. You know, I think they had had 2 10-play drives prior to that. They came away with no points. They had the fumble on the third down that really cost them early in the game. And it felt like they could have, you know, they left some things on the field there. They could have had a much bigger halftime lead than they did. I think that probably played into them not being as aggressive at the end of the first half. The fact that the offense wasn't really clicking yet at that point. In second half, you know, I kind of talked about it at the top of the show. In hindsight, absolutely, you know, go for the kill. At the moment, I thought he was making the right decision. I thought they were, you know, milking that clock and getting the Ravens into a position where they were going to be hard pressed to tie the game. If if that field goal comes off and it goes through, we're having a different conversation right now. It obviously didn't. It honestly looked like somebody fell on the offensive line where Calais Campbell came through. Looking at the replay, it looked like somebody kind of slipped. I know they didn't get out of their break right or what happened, but he pretty much came through unblocked as a result of that. Kind of a freak situation. But that being said, you know, I think if you get the touchdown there, obviously, even with the field goal, you're still banking on, you know, them taking a little bit of time to go down and score and then you recovering an onside kick and being able to run out the clock. You get the touchdown there, the game's over. There's no question about it. And I think, to me, though, that goes back before the third down. It goes back to having first down at the 17. That's where if you're going to be aggressive, you want to be aggressive there. You know, they run twice before that to get the 3rd and 8, who knows, you know, another quick pass or two in there. Maybe you're dealing with a goal line situation, still burning time and still making the Ravens call timeouts, but having a much better chance to punch it in the end zone. And then, you know, if it's 3rd and goal from the 4 or something like that, you're probably much more likely to throw the ball than you are from 3rd and 8 at the 15. One thing Wright said today that I thought was really interesting is that, you know, he and Wentz were kind of signaling back and forth there right before the huddle. And there was one pass play that was sort of on the menu in that situation. And they obviously went against it. They went for the run. But he said the look that Baltimore came out in, that pass play really wasn't going to work anyway. And so they spent a long time on the plane, he and Carson, talking about, hey, if we get in this situation again, something similar, and we do want to pass, what do we need to be looking at there? Because they don't feel like, even if they had called the pass, they don't feel like they had the right pass play up. I think that's an interesting thing. It shows you how deep they go in their thinking. And I think a lot of times we as outsiders, we're just looking at the end result. And if the run play didn't work, you should have passed. If the pass play didn't work, you should have run. You know, it's interesting because all year long they've been burnt by being too aggressive, going for these fourth downs and having them not work. They finally decide to lay it up, you know, do the conservative thing and kick the field goal. That backfires as well. But I think it shows you just how much depth there is. It wasn't just simply, hey, throw it, be aggressive. It's them actually saying, look, even if we are going to throw a ball, we need a better call than the one we were going to make. That played into it. If they had a better pass up, maybe they make a different decision there. And it shows you how much and how complicated these situations really are.
This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's not possible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. So why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brand they happen to carry at the time? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at your home and in your pocket. You could save so much money when using Rock Auto as well, 30%, 50%, or even 100% more compared to auto parts chain stores around the country. Rock Auto is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for the last 20 years, and they have everything you need, engine control modules, brake parts, really anything you need. RockAuto.com has it for you. Go to RockAuto.com right now, see the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us box so that we sent you over there. They have a main selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Colts fans, go to RockAuto.com right now and write Locked On, LockedOn, in the How'd You Hear About Us box.
Last point here, George, before we dive into a quick preview of the next couple weeks, and especially the Texans game on Sunday, where it's, I think, obviously a game where you have to get back right and rebound and really blow that team out of the water. I know they were competitive against the Patriots, but it's a game where you should win big at home against the Houston Texans. But before we dive into that, I want to hit on the offense real quick, George, because I think this is the most yards ever in a Frank Reich offense since 2018. They had over 500 yards of offense. Jonathan Taylor looked like a star last night. Michael Pittman Jr. over the last couple of weeks, really since week two, George, looks like he's taken that leap to a potential wide receiver one star in this league. He looked incredible last night to me. Carson Wentz had one of his best games of his career, like we mentioned earlier in the show. Paris Campbell looked great. Molly Cox looked great. Kylan Grant even got involved in the offense as well. Even though they lost this game, George, this offense, how they've scripted this game, chunk shots down the field in the passing game, taking risks, really a good running game, passing game balance. This feels like hopefully a game, George, where the Colts offense can go back and watch this and be like, we should do this every single week against a Raven defense that's legitimately a top 10 unit in the NFL. To go and do that against them, this should be a building block moment for this offense where, especially once T.Y. Hilton returns, George, and Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith for the full offensive line, this could really be a situation where they can go and try to plague this every single Sunday.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about the total yards. I think it was 513, most since 2014. So not just the most for a Frank Reich offense, but the most since, you know, they had a healthy Andrew Luck in his third season. So, and that was at Jacksonville. That was week three of Jacksonville that year. So that was against a far less intimidating defense. I am much more optimistic about this offense moving forward than I am the defense. I think, you know, one guy that really we haven't talked about a lot, and with good reason, but a big difference maker for that team on Monday night was Matt Pryor. He got the start at right tackle. I think that helped solidify a problem area for them. You know, everybody knows the struggles that Davenport had had. He went in there. It allows them to have a little more confidence to have some of those, you know, longer developing plays and take some more shots downfield. And I think that's the thing about this offense, getting healthier. You know, Carson Wentz, his ankles are healing. You can see that he's a much different quarterback, even than he was against Miami, night and day from Tennessee, but he was much better than he was even against Miami in his ability to move around and make plays. That's a big factor here. You mentioned getting T.Y. Hilton back. I think it's going to be tough for defenses, you know, when he's back to decide what to do. I think they are starting to shade more towards Pittman now because it's four straight games with six catches for him. That opens some things up for Paris Campbell, for Mo Alie-Cox, but you get T.Y. Hilton out there, and I think it's going to be even more ability to spread that field and to take shots downfield. You get Quentin Nelson back. You get Braden Smith back. You know, there are reasons to believe this offense can continue to improve. You know, this was what, the fifth game with Carson Wentz in this system, and none of them have come with all of his weapons and with the offensive line that they expected to have in front of him. And only, I think, three of them have come with him actually being healthy or, you know, 90, 95% of where he should be. So as pessimistic as I am about the defense moving forward, and as much as I think the problems that we're seeing there are going to be year-long problems and they're just going to have to figure out ways to work around them, I think the offense is definitely on the upswing. And I think you're just going to – they should, and we'll see how it goes. This season feels cursed in a lot of ways, so I'm scared to even say this. They should just keep getting better from here. Theoretically, you're going to be adding pieces. You're going to be getting healthier. They should just get better and better as they gel together and move forward.
Before he closes out, George, wanted to hit on the next 2 weeks of the Colts schedule and looking ahead to the Houston game a little bit on Sunday at Lucas Oil Stadium, 1 o'clock kickoff there. The next five games, George, for the Colts and the Titans, I know the Colts are technically around 2.5 games back of the Titans since they lost their first game against them, but Tennessee, I think, might have the toughest schedule in the NFL the next 5 weeks compared to the Colts. Might have one of the softest schedules in the NFL. And then here's the next five games for the Colts. You have the Texans at 49ers, who could be without Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. It could be Nate Sudfeld, the former Indiana Hoosier, starting that game. Then they play at home against the Titans, then home against the Jets, and then home against the Jaguars. Meanwhile, the Titans play the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, Rams, and Saints. So that's three of the best teams in the NFL they're going to be going against over the next 5 weeks. And the Colts game is obviously going to be a tough one. And the Saints, who are really up and down each week, but they could give them a run for their money in that one as well. I mean, this is such a situation, George, where for the AFC South, you could be looking at around Thanksgiving or at least November, where these two teams are around 500 battling for that divisional spot, because these next 5 weeks could be a situation where it wouldn't be crazy to say the Colts could be leading the AFC South by then.
I think that's what's critical now about this week. The biggest thing the Colts can't do, this loss on Monday was obviously devastating. We talked about it right at the top of the show. You know, you were poised to have a statement win on the road that really turned your season around. Instead, you have an epic collapse, soul-crushing defeat. You now can't let that linger. You can't let that carry over. I think that's going to be one of the keys to this week. Houston is obviously struggling, as everyone expected them to be. They were competitive, as you mentioned, though, against the Patriots on Sunday. And I think this is one of those games where you need to come out. You need to have a fast start. You need to take away the Texans' will to compete early in that game. Because I think if you let them hang around and you let that doubt linger and you let sort of the aftermath of this game bleed into it, you risk, you know, blowing a game against a division opponent that you have to have. I mean, that's, I think we talk every week, is this a must-win? Sunday absolutely is a must-win. Everything else that's happened up to this point this season, the Colts can't – they have no more margin for error. They have got to go and beat this team. And as you said, beat them probably convincingly. It should be, you know, a pretty convincing win on Sunday. And set yourself up to take advantage of just what you were talking about. This is a stretch in the schedule after that five-game start that everybody knew from the get-go was going to be a terrible gauntlet. And then when you throw in the injuries and everything else they've dealt with, a slow start was expected for this team. 1-4 is probably on the worst end of that. But I don't think anybody expected anything more than 3-2 or 2-3 at this point. Just looking at the injuries and who they were playing, now you're entering a spot where you need to make some hay. You need to win some winnable games and hope that some teams give you some help and the Titans struggle a little bit. It is absolutely realistic that they could get into November very much in contention for this division, but it all starts with this week and somehow putting that horrible loss behind you and getting reset for Houston on Sunday.
Before I let you go here, George, because you'll be back on next Tuesday, recap the Texans game and looking ahead to the 49ers game, what is your prediction for the game on Sunday? It looks like Vegas has the Colts there about 9.5 points. I feel like, quite honestly, George, this is a game where the Colts should be able to just put the same formula in place that we saw in the first half of the Ravens game on defense and the entire game on offense. I'm going 31-13. If it's any closer than that, if it's like, let's say, a touchdown game late in this game, I'll be very concerned just about this team moving forward. This should be a blowout game from the beginning. I think this is a motivated Colts team where you have to really show we're sick and tired of losing. We want to go out there and just make a statement. I'm going 31-13, and this one's pretty much over by the end of the third quarter. What's your prediction, George?
That's funny because I think a lot of times you share your score and it's so close to what I'm thinking in my head. It's kind of scary from time to time here. I'm leaning 34-10. You know, I think they need, again, though, it all comes down to the start on Sunday. I really think they need to come out in the first half and take it to the Texans on both offense and defense and, you know, put the game out of doubt. You're talking about being over at the end of third quarter. It needs to be no doubt about who's going to win at halftime, I think. The longer you let Houston hang around and the more doubt you let the creep in and the more you let this loss to the Ravens linger, that's where I think you get in the danger zone. I absolutely agree with you. You cannot let this game be competitive on Sunday. Go out there, get a fast start, and come away with a win and maybe start to feel better about yourselves.
George, appreciate it as always coming on each Tuesday throughout the season here on Locked On Colts. And it's been a rough start for sure, 1-4. But like we just mentioned, and there's a soft part of the schedule coming up where they could really make some noise here and maybe get back in the AFC South discussion. So go ahead and follow George Yvonne already on Twitter, Colts fans, at GM Bremer, and go read his excellent work as always covering the Colts for the Herald Bulletin. George, appreciate the time tonight.
Thanks, Evan. It's a pleasure every week.